You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Use that. Drop us all your questions, all your text messages, your voicemails. We do mailbag once a week, every single Wednesday. So make sure you get those voicemails, those text messages in. That's 331-979-1369 once again. Well, Matt, welcome back from the weekend. This is a, for any Chicago sports fan out there, this is a tough morning to swallow after a really, really good Bears season. The only thing I can say, and I said this to you off air, is with the Bears season, the way it concluded last night, this means the shift in focus on Chicago sports is to the Bulls. I don't know if that's necessarily good or a bad thing, but how you doing?
Yeah, it's been a tough morning. I thought I might feel better after a good night's sleep, and I don't. Not yet. It's going to take some time to get over that one. We waited 8 long years to see the Bears play a playoff game, and there was so much fun and excitement about this team. And especially after, you know, the Cubs disappointing early exit, the Cubs losing their wild card game, earlier in the fall, and the Bulls and Blackhawks really struggling through the early winter months. Like, the Bears is all we had as Chicago sports fans to really be happy and optimistic about. And it's just the way it ended. You know, they lost as a team, but the way that ended was just even more of a gut punch after the year that we saw from Cody Parkey and his struggles. And you're right. Football season is over, and now more eyes in Chicago will turn to the Bulls and the Blackhawks, and we'll see. We've got, 42 games left, so we're right at the halfway point. Game 41 on Wednesday to start a long, tough West Coast road trip, and the Bulls are trying to figure some things out. We'll see what they can do under Jim Boylan, but man, it just sucks. I feel shitty.
The city's kind of depressed, and I get it, but if there's anything to say as far as where I sit from a fan and from being a fan of Chicago sports, I think Sox fans can kind of relate to this more so than anything else. Like, look, the Sox have been in a rebuild, have had little to nothing to be very happy about over the last few years. The Cubs and Cubs fans can't really relate with that. They've had a lot of success, so I can see how a lot of Cubs fans combined with Bears fans would take this loss even heavier. Like, as a Sox fan, as somebody who's a fan of Indiana basketball, who's had a lot of struggles over the last few years, like being a sports fan for me has been very tough, and it's, I don't know if it's numbed me to the point where I was like, I should have figured this was going to happen, but man, it was a real kick between the legs. But go check out Lauren Cox, Locked On Bears, for the entire breakdown of yesterday, kind of what happens after this. He does a great job over at Locked On Bears, so go check him out. It's Locked On Bears once again with Lauren Cox. All right, Matt, well, I guess my goal now, just because you sound so depressed right now, is to try and, let's try and cheer you up a little bit by talking about Friday night's game with the Bulls. That was probably the most complete game I've seen the Chicago Bulls play all season long. That was probably the most fun game watching as a Bulls fan all year. And I don't know if the Bulls are going to be able to recreate that, even in a loss. I just felt like everything was clicking. All four of the core guys that we want to see for the first time all contributed in big ways. So at least Friday night, I was riding a high, even though that they lost to the Pacers. I don't know about you.
Yeah, it was at least entertaining and refreshing to see a game in which the Bulls were competitive against a good team, and their key core guys were making plays throughout the game, and especially making plays late. And, I mean, that Pacers team, you do have to credit the Bulls for giving them that tough of a game. The Pacers were, like, the hottest team coming into that game Friday night. Hottest team around the league. They had won five straight. They had won 12 of their last 14. Like, they were rolling. And the Bulls gave them a tough fight. And, you could talk about how Wendell had a really nice bounce-back game, led the team with 43 minutes after his weird 13-minute performance in their blowout loss to Orlando earlier in the week. 15 points, 8 rebounds, certainly put his mark on the game. Dunn, 16 points, a career high, 17 assists. You'd love to see that. Also limited his turnovers to 2. But really, it's the two most talented pieces that we have to talk about, Markkanen and LaVine, because we've been worried about their lack of chemistry between not playing that many games together last season and then again because of Markkanen's injury and then LaVine's injury on the heel of that. Not having a whole lot of games together this season, and when they are on the floor, not looking like they have a whole lot of chemistry. But the fact that Markkanen and LaVine scored 27 and 31 respectively in this game, to me, was the biggest positive. It's a heartbreaking loss. LaVine hitting that corner three on the catch and shoot that he just barely didn't get off in time. And, you know, Oladipo with the heartbreaker that he banks in from the top of the arc, like, it was fun that the Bulls were in such an exciting game, and I loved the fact that Markkanen and LaVine both had really good games.
You notice that when they're all making shots, the ball seems to just glide on the offensive side of the ball, like between Markkanen and Dunn and Carter. And I know there was a little bit of back and forth at the end where fans were like, well, I get it, they played good and they played good in overtime, but like, why was he running with Jack Harrison as opposed to letting Hutch get the experience of being in there late in the fourth quarter? I don't really have a big problem with that. Like, if you're going to go with who you think is going to attack on defense, and that's what the Bulls were doing to that Pacers team, making them kind of struggle, I was all right with it. Like, it's not that big of a deal to me, but I think you hit it right on the head. Like, seeing Markkanen and LaVine thrive offensively together, this is really the first time I think we've seen this. Like, it's either usually Markkanen has a huge night, one of them is kind of quiet, LaVine will be kind of quiet, or LaVine will go off for 30 plus points and Markkanen will be kind of quiet. And to see both of those guys kind of thrive, and then on top of that, Chris Dunn, 17 assists, like, are you kidding me? Like, that was nuts. And I don't know if we're going to continue to see repeat performances like that. And Dunn doesn't need to have 17 assists a game, but just knowing that he can break out and have games like that to add with 21 points, like, that was all good things for me. And Carter finally got involved, and it was nice to see him pitch in certain spots too, not just defensively. So I was thoroughly impressed. And like you said too, like, of course, Oladipo banks in like a Hail Mary three with 0.3 left, and LaVine hits the shot at the buzzer. Like, even regardless of all of that, I thought the Bulls played collectively a fantastic game against, like you had mentioned, a Pacers team who came in over a month stretch since Boylan took over on 12-3. The Pacers had the best defensive rating in all of basketball at 99.8. They had the 10th best offensive rating at 111.2. So this Pacers team, like you had mentioned, has been probably one of the best teams in basketball, and I was very impressed with the way the Bulls played on Friday
yeah,
night.
Yeah, and just to go back to Chris Dunn for a second, because your comments made me think about it. We've seen Chris Dunn continue to struggle behind the three-point line, and that, of course, is still a worry. Because, and you know, we'll get to the loss to Brooklyn in a second, but when you saw it a lot of times in that game against Brooklyn yesterday afternoon, when Dunn has an open look at a three, he's so hesitant to take it, and teams basically just let him shoot from there and don't even bother guarding him at the perimeter, and for good reason, because he hasn't proven that he can confidently take and knock down the three-point shot. So that is something that this team needs to address moving forward, and hopefully he can find some kind of respectability behind the three-point line. But in the meantime, we're seeing development from Chris Dunn around the floor. He's always been a decent, if not above-average, mid-range shooter, and we saw some of that in the latter stages of the game against the Pacers. But it's the fact that we keep talking about what Chris Dunn's potential can be and whether or not he can be this team's starting point guard and whether or not he can be a above average defensive guard and a pass first point guard to get his guys going. And I thought that was one of the really interesting and positive takeaways from the Pacers game, is that, you know, you love seeing LaVine and Markkanen finish with the numbers they finished with, but you go back and look and see that Chris Dunn had 5 assists before taking a single shot in that game, starting off, and the Bulls jumped out to a 30-18 lead after the first quarter. Dunn looked to get his teammates involved before looking to take shots for himself. And as much as Bulls fans would like to see some development from Dunn as far as a guy who can score from all over the floor, I think even more importantly, we want to see Dunn being able to orchestrate an offense that's whose primary scorers are Markkanen and LaVine. And he certainly seemed to do that on Friday.
Yeah, that assist-to-turnover ratio is looking real nice for Chris Dunn right now. And that Friday game will help it a ton. 17 assists to 2 turnovers. I wanted to mention real quick, because you brought up Chris Dunn's three-point shot. It is strange. Like, you know, you remember back a couple weeks when he airballed a three at the rim. I think that might have been against the Cavs. You know, Chris Dunn was able to hit three-point shots, but it's only for one spot on the floor. It's from the corner, and that's the easiest three-point shot on the floor. Look it back at last year. He attempted about 15% of his three-pointers from the corner, but he was shooting nearly 40%. This year, he's shooting around 20% of his threes in the corner. He doesn't take threes all that often, but he's shooting 50% from the corners. So I think it's going to take some time for Chris Dunn to figure out whether or not he can consistently knock down threes. But another factor, too, is, you know, LaVine and Dunn both, or LaVine and Markkanen both took 9 threes in this game. And I think if the Bulls want to stay in games and really see what you have as far as a three-point threat, those guys, I think, between LaVine and Markkanen need to be taking 6 to 8 threes a game between the two of those. Because other than that, look at Brooklyn last night. The Bulls shot, 18 threes to Brooklyn's 46? Like, you're gonna go against teams that are just going to be heavily reliant on that three-pointer. And even if you are shooting at a high percentage like the Bulls did against the Nets, you're still going to find yourself down 15, down 17, because teams are willing to just chuck up threes, even if they're only shooting at 30 to 35% range. So, got to get those guys going. I know Boylan wants to slow shit down, and Bobby Portis said it enough against the Nets, but you got to find weapons on the perimeter too, and I think it starts with Markkanen and LaVine, and maybe if Dunn can find some type of stroke from there too, that's even more of a positive.
Yeah, and that was the other surprising part about Dunn's game against Indy, is that he did knock down both of the threes he took, but again, against Brooklyn yesterday, still, same number of attempts, just 2 3-point attempts, and he missed both of them. So it's, you're right, and that Dunn doesn't take a lot of threes because he's not a confident three-point shooter. And this whole idea about how many threes the Bulls are taking as a team under Boylan, go check out Darnell Mayberry's nuggets from the Brooklyn game if you haven't already. Our friend Darnell, who covers the Bulls for The Athletic, he did a great job with his quotes from Boylan and his, as you said, some quotes from Bobby Portis about how this Bulls team is functioning offensively right now. And Boylan was more concerned about and more pleased with the fact that the Bulls outscored Brooklyn in the paint and said, well, you know, we missed some open looks around the paint and around the rim. And if we do that, then maybe we win. But, you know, there's a reason that three balls are trending in the NBA. And there's a reason that more and more teams are building offenses around three-point shots. Markkanen can shoot them confidently. LaVine, especially late in that game against Indy, we see can shoot them confidently. Bobby Portis, in his first game back after a long layoff, surprisingly shot the ball well because he was not shooting the three ball well earlier this season. He was shooting at like sub 30%, but he was 3 of 4 from downtown off the bench yesterday. So you'd like to see that, but there's still, like, between Chris Dunn, Chandler Hutchison, and Jim Boylan's new favorite teacher's pet, Shaq Harrison, like, you got a lot of people on this team that can't really shoot threes. It seems like it's been an ongoing problem for the Bulls roster for several seasons now, you know, regardless of who the coach is. But for Boylan to not see an issue with 18 three-point attempts to 46 for Brooklyn and saying, well, yeah, but that may be true, but we outscored them in the paint. Well, guess what? Buckets in the paint are worth 2 as opposed to 3. So, I mean, we're trying to be patient with Jim Boylan to see what he does with his offense as we progress, but those are some troubling statements from him.
Yeah, I don't know how you win many NBA games, especially, like, you even mentioned at the beginning of the episode, like, the Bulls have to go on this West Coast trip now, and every single team they're going to go up against is probably going to shoot 30 or more threes against the Bulls over the next week and a half, 10 days or so. Like, every single team is going to do that, and to think you can match that by simply just trying to grind it out in the paint, I don't think is an approach that's necessarily going to work. Like, you stayed in the game against Indy because you shot 28 threes as opposed to the Pacers 28 threes. So I think it's about matchup, but also realizing, like, especially over the next 5 games or so, it's like you're going up against teams that are going to unload from the perimeter. So how are you going to combat that? Are you going to allow the team to have a little bit more wiggle room and shoot some more threes? Or are you just going to say, you know what, no, we're going to play our game and let the chips fall where they may? I don't know what he's going to do. I probably lean towards more of he's going to revert back to what he's doing and let the chips fall where they may. Matt, I wanted to mention one other thing before we kind of wrap up this Brooklyn game. There's a couple thoughts I had on that. But just looking at Chris Dunn so far, his points generated by assists last year was 740, and he only played in 54 games. Through 14 games this season alone, he's got 227 points generated by assists. If you multiply that out, if you match that to the games he played last year, he would land around 843 points generated by assists, which means he is helping facilitate points. He's helping in taking a step forward, maybe more so than he did last year. And I mean, he does have more weapons now this year than he did last year, so you like to see that. You like to see that little bit of a boost in him being able to command this offense, and that's kind of what this is now. It's like Boylan said, Chris Dunn's his guy. So if Chris Dunn can command this offense, I think it's going to help Carter, it's going to help Markkanen, it's going to help LaVine kind of thrive. And if Chris Dunn can be a scorer too for you, especially in clutch time, kind of like what we saw on Friday nights, that's even better.
Well, I was just going to say, how awesome was that Dunn dunk late in the fourth quarter?
That was
City? Or was that? I think that was awesome. An overtime, actually.
Yeah.
That was ferocious. Like, we know that Chris Dunn can attack and get to the basket.
Dunn, he drives it. He goes, dunks the ball.
He didn't come for the massage, he came for the pencil.
And then the ball poked free. Oladipo with it, and a
Chris
jump ball
Dunn.
Call.
Chris Dunn, I told you Christmas is over, but Dunn is delivering. Oh, my goodness.
What?
And that one was just on a nice swing pass where he saw that he had a clear lane and just drove. But, you know, for the love of God, Chris Dunn, get better at shooting threes and get more confident shooting threes. But in the meantime, like, you're right, it certainly seems like Boylan has confidence in Dunn to be the guy to run the offense. And you hope he can continue to find buckets for his teammates, because I think all Bulls fans would be okay with Dunn being more of an assists guy and Markkanen and LaVine being this team's leading scorers. I feel like that makes the most sense with the pieces they have right now.
I think it's kind of funny that between that, the Chris Dunn dunk, Zach LaVine hitting back-to-back three-point shots, going back and forth with kind of Oladipo.
Dunn to LaVine. Pump fake with Oladipo on it. Long three.
Oh, my goodness.
Big-time
players make big-time plays.
Oladipo. Here he comes. Stops. And the game is going to overtime.
Oh, my. Oh, my goodness. Zach LaVine.
Wow.
Markkanen hit a big one late.
He did. And, like, I thought Stacey King was going to pass out on the broadcast because it was like every possession he had to, like, go off. And it's... Bulls broadcasts are at their best when Stacey King can just kind of unload. And that was a case of Friday night. So I appreciate Stacey King for those moments, man. Like,
Stacey is better when he has fun calls and exciting things are happening, as opposed to the Bulls are trailing by 20 and he's talking about how they need to keep feeding Robin Lopez in the post. Like, I love you, Stacey, but no, stop.
Last thing, Jabari Parker got in the game on Friday night. Have any thoughts on that?
No. No, I do not have any thoughts.
The
on
only
that.
Thought I have is here comes the showcase. Like, I know Boylan said, like, all of a sudden now, I don't know, like, I don't even know what the exact quote is, but something along the lines of Jabari will be ready. We'll figure out the rotation going forward. He didn't get in the game against the Nets yesterday night, so I don't know what's going forward. I thought this was going to be a case of, like, okay, the Bulls are going to try to showcase Jabari until the point where, I don't know, either he has absolutely zero value or they find maybe a trade partner and he sits. But, I mean, it does no good to have him on the bench if you're going to try to trade him. That would be my only guess. And, like, if you're not going to trade him and you're not going to take on bad contract, then just waive the guy, man. Like, sticking him in a game for, I don't know how long he played, 15 minutes, like, that, I just don't see what good that does for him or does for the Bulls, so... To me, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
No, and it's not like he raised his trade value at all, because he didn't honestly look that good. He looked like a guy who was a DNP on the shelf for a month and hadn't been in an NBA game in a while. And, you know, Paxson's comments after he, you know, had to speak about the holiday trade and waving Cam, essentially tried to say, the question that was posed to him about, well, you know, looking back, do you... You know, do you regret trying to, you know, pigeonhole Jabari into the three spot? And is, you know, you traded Holiday, which frees up some minutes at the three, but does that mean that Jabari's going to get minutes there now? Or do you regret, you know, the way that you handled that with trying to play him at the three? And Paxson's response was essentially like, nah, it's in the past. I'm not worried about it. Like, it's not a concern anymore. It's in the past. I was like, dude, no, it's not in the past, because this guy is still on your roster and is still creating a very awkward situation for himself, for your front office, for that guy's teammates, and for your new coach, who are all kind of sitting around saying, like, well, this guy, like, the Bulls are struggling to score. This guy can score, but we don't really see him as a guy who could play because he doesn't meet Jim Boylan's defensive effort standards and whatever other BS excuses they want to use. So it's not a thing that's in the past. Because until you deal with Jabari, he's still an eyesore to this organization. And that's not me, like, making fun of Jabari. I'm saying the way that this has all been handled is an eyesore to the organization. So until you find a trade partner for him or buy him out, this still remains a problem. So they got to do something. And no, putting him into the indie game for a few minutes means nothing. And guess what? Like, the newest addition to the team, Wayne Selden, got in there late against Brooklyn, and still Jabari was a DNP. So I don't think Jabari's making his way back into the rotation anytime soon, especially now with the return of Bobby Portis, who's healthy, hopefully stays healthy. And, you know, Jabari's trade value is what it is, and I don't think it's that much. So we'll see what the Bulls do with it. But it's still an eyesore for the team.
I found
team.
It so hilarious and so infuriating that he said that. Like, oh, that's not big. That's not a concern. It's in the past. It's like, dude, that happened 6 months ago. That was your big pitch in the summer. Like, hands up. It's like,
yeah.
Dude, like, you can't just sweep that under the rug and pretend like Bulls fans are stupid and forgot about that. It's like, no.
Oh, the Jabari thing? No, I thought y'all had forgotten about that by now.
It's like, dude, like, you're treating this like this happened 3 or 4 years ago. Like, you're using the same kind of complex for, like, if you were trying to explain the campaign trade over again. It's like, dude, this didn't happen 3-4 years ago. This was 6 months ago, and you paid the man $20 million. So, like, I'm appreciative that you realize that that was an idiotic move at the time, and that you realize that playing him at the three doesn't work. But just completely ignoring it, as opposed to saying, "Yeah, you know what? Maybe we reevaluated things, and that wasn't the right move. We made a mistake." Like, I feel like that would have came across so much better to all of us as fans than saying, "Oh, we're just not concerning ourselves with that." Well,
it's just the latest example of the hilariousness of the extreme levels to which Paxton tries to treat the fan base like they're stupid and just use the most base forms of smoke and mirror. False transparency to try and talk his way out of things. It's like, you know what it made me think of? Listening to Paxton talk about the Jabari situation. It's like those new State Farm commercials are running out with Aaron Rodgers and his State Farm agent and his agent. And the one where he comes to them in the living room and he's like, "Somebody may have started a towel fire that charred the bathroom wall, but it wasn't me because I never use the bathroom. I just meditate and I make it go away." Like, to me, that was Paxton's explanation for the Jabari situation. It's like, "Oh, no. Jabari, we're going to meditate and make that situation go away. But it definitely wasn't me. But it's definitely something we should check out."
That is such an odd commercial. That is such a weird commercial. That's a great reference. That is so true. It's like, yeah, when you try to erase Bulls fans' minds of that from 6 months ago. And then finally, just talking about the front office, I should make mention too. First time we've heard of Dove Collins since he was appointed and we had the big press conference back in September of 2017. This is the first time we've heard of Dove Collins at all. Like, all of a sudden, him yes. and Paxton and Boylan.
Senior advisor to Vice President John Paxton.
Oh, I'm hitting my head right now because it's like, I saw some Bulls fans going, "Well, it's good that Doug Collins is getting in there and telling and giving some advice to Boylan." It's like, dude, like, this is kind of like just a facade, man. Like, this is all just show. Like, maybe he is giving Boylan some tips on how to run an offense and, I don't know. Maybe he is. He was a decent coach when he was in the NBA, but I just, like, this is the first time we're hearing from him in 14, 15 months.
Yeah.
Like, I take it at face value, and it's basically nothing.
Since he came on board, whenever that was that they hired him, like before the season started, sometime last offseason or maybe even last season, it's like Bulls fans have just been wondering. It's like the Bobs in Office Space. Like, what would you say you do here? What is Doug Collins' role? Because Paxton always speaks in these vague platitudes about Collins and what exactly he does for the team. "Well, he's a great sounding board for me and Gar." Okay, cool. Well, we continue to see you guys make the same head-scratching decisions over and over again. So how has Doug impacted that? And now to hear Doug Collins just brought up at all or referenced at all for the first time in months is John Paxton saying, "Well, yeah, you know, Doug Collins and I talked to Jim about maybe trying to find opportunities to speed up the offense a little bit." Cool. Great. Really glad you're giving that guy a paycheck. Thanks a lot.
I just don't know what it solves. Maybe Doug Collins is giving him sound advice. Maybe. But it's hard for me to buy as a fan, like, when I haven't heard anything from him in 15 months. And, like, if he was important enough of a hire to have a full-on press conference for and say that he was going to be another really good asset for this team, like, you can't just throw him out there after 15 months after having that press conference to say, "Yeah, see, look what he's doing. Like, he's helping Boylan." Like, where was he with Fred? Like, why didn't, like, I don't know. It's weird. And to me, I just find it very, like, showy. That's what it was all about. It's like, maybe they are having meetings, but it's kind of odd that all of a sudden, you know, after a really, really exciting Pacers game, it's like, "Oh, yeah, but we met with Boylan, with Doug Collins and all of this." And it's like, come on, man. Like, it just all sounds like very showy and very, very facade-y to me. So,
yeah. Well, and yes, the Pacers game was an improvement. And you did see the Bulls getting out and running a little bit more and doing things that were more free-flowing with player and ball movement in that game when a lot of their guys were playing well, and that was nice. And it's probably not a coincidence that that happened, and Paxton said, "Yeah, Doug and I talked to Jim about maybe loosening things up on offense a little bit." So we got one game where that was happening, and then we turn around and have another double-digit loss to a mediocre team in Brooklyn yesterday where, guess what? The Bulls slowed it down again. The Bulls got tripled in three-point attempts, And Jim Boylan after the game was saying things like, well, you know, we just need to be more efficient scoring in the paint. And we're like, what? But Paxson and Collins just told you to loosen the offense up a little bit. And so Boylan's like, all right, well, so I did that the one time. And now we're back to my way.
I did it the one time. We had fun. We played with a lot of spirit and energy and a lot of passion.
You happy now? Oh, back to win sprints.
So the Bulls starting five against the Pacers, their offensive rating was a 116.6. Their defensive rating was a 116.6 for a net rating of zero. Pretty good. Pretty good for a young starting five against a really damn good Pacers team. Sunday afternoon, Bulls starting five offensive rating was a 106.2, and their defensive rating was a 124.4 for a negative 18.2. So not a very good performance against the Nets. But you're going to have these games. You're going to have these games where the Bulls just don't show up, or, you know, a team flat out plays better than they did. And the Nets did that. They did enough to beat the Bulls. And when you shoot over 50% and you're shooting 46 threes in a game, you're probably going to beat a team that shoots only 18. Like, so that's just the case of it, of what it is. But I'm cool. I'm fine. The weekend was what it was, and I was cool with the high I got from the Friday game, and that's probably the best game we're going to see all year. Just good to see all four guys connecting. Matt, final topic of the day, last couple of minutes here, got to talk about the other news that happened yesterday. Tom Thibodeau out in Minnesota as president and head coach. And then right after that, we talked about it over a month ago when Fred Hoiberg was fired here, said there was rumors about him being maybe a replacement in Minnesota, and sure enough, those rumors came back around. Doesn't sound like anything is going to happen immediately, but this could happen over the offseason. But what are your initial thoughts, Tom Thibodeau, out after a win against the Lakers?
I told you before we pressed record, chatting this morning, that the only thing that managed to get me to crack a smile for a second yesterday as I was drowning my sorrows. I went to a bar in North Loop with Big Dave and John, my Outsiders buddies, to catch the fourth quarter of the Bears game. And they were very supportive because clearly I was the one taking it the hardest. And the only thing that managed to get me to crack a smile was Dave saying, "Hey man, you need a laugh? Tim's just got fired and they're talking about replacing him with Fred Hoiberg." And it did. Like, it did cheer me up for like a solid 90 seconds. I didn't feel like complete death, because you and I joked about it when those rumors first started to talk, you know, to creep up that Tibbs was on the hot seat. And, you know, there is that pre-existing relationship between T-Wolves owner Glenn Taylor and Fred Hoiberg, who served a brief stint in the Timberwolves front office and also played for the organization back in his playing days. I mean, the crazy loops upon loops in like some trapped maze of NBA hysteria, if this actually happens, is just too funny for words. Like, Fred might go back to coaching Derrick Rose and Taj Gibson. The guy that got fired because he couldn't make it work and replaced with Fred Hoiberg, who had to try and make it work with Jimmy Butler, who couldn't make it work with Jimmy Butler, got traded to the new team of the guy who couldn't make it work with Jimmy Butler, who then had to trade Jimmy Butler, got fired, and might be replaced by the guy who replaced him because he couldn't make it work with Jimmy Butler, and then got fired because he couldn't make it work with the guys after Jimmy Butler. I mean, like, the number of loops in this are hysterical, and I so want it to happen. I know I told you before, I didn't know if Fred would get another shot to coach at the NBA level. I don't know if he has what it takes, but I would be completely open to watching this experiment. It would, however, be so hard for my guy Tibbs. Like, God, how to get fired from back-to-back jobs and replaced with the same dude? God, that's tough.
Yeah, that is really tough. It's funny. I was going to ask you, too. I thought when we were talking about Hoiberg potentially replacing Tibbs down the line, just when these reports came out at the beginning of December, I thought I remembered you saying that you don't know if Fred Hoiberg's going to get another job in the NBA. I felt like he might, and I still think, like, that UCLA job just opened a few weeks ago, and I thought maybe if he does want to go back to college, it's a perfect spot. It's a historical school with a ton of legends from college basketball. So I figured, okay, maybe that's a spot. That's perfect for a guy coming down. It's kind of a step down from the NBA, but not really. Like, when you're coaching a UCLA program with that much prestige, he didn't really, there wasn't much about that. There was, okay, maybe he's linked, and then it's like, oh, it doesn't seem like he's that interested. Well, now we kind of know why he's not that interested. I think he's holding out for this job, and we'll see at the end of the season if this comes to fruition. I don't think he's going to replace in midseason. If the Timberwolves are serious about hiring Fred Hoiberg, they'll wait till the offseason to really make that official and see what moves they'll make. But it is certainly interesting, something we should keep our eyes on. And Matt, I will be a wreck if he goes there, coaches that Timberwolves team, and all of a sudden he's doing everything he was supposed to do here in Chicago. But that would be classic Bulls,
right? I mean,
right?
Yeah, it would be. But at the same time, you know, the Bulls don't have Karl Anthony Towns on their roster. Like, you know, it's a different talent, different pieces to work with. And maybe Fred gets a shot, and, you know, it's not like I don't think Fred deserves a second chance. I just didn't know, based on his tenure in Chicago, if he would get another chance. Personally, right. I don't think he has what it takes, because I don't think he could control NBA egos, which is, in my opinion, at least half the job as an NBA coach. Yeah, draw up some plays, X's and O's, whatever. You got to get big money players with big egos to get along and play well and play as a team and not play as individuals. Fred never managed to do that here with the Bulls. Might he be able to do that in Minnesota? Maybe. Seemed like for a while after the Jimmy trade, the Wolves were starting to figure some things out, and they had a nice little streak of wins that they built together. But Glenn Taylor, in his reasoning for firing Tibbs, which the other funny part was that Tibbs got canned after a 22-point win. But it wasn't obviously the performance from that game. It was a list of teams that Glenn Taylor rattled off, like, we shouldn't have lost to that team. We shouldn't have lost to that team. Some mediocre or subpar teams across the league where he thought, we're a better team than them. We should have won that game. Can Fred Hoiberg accomplish more than Tibbs with the same group of players now that they've gotten rid of the Jimmy Butler drama problem? I don't know. Because, and this is something else I said about the Tibbs versus Fred thing here in Chicago when the Bulls made that transition to the head coaching spot, I always felt like Tibbs, at least here in Chicago, maybe not so much in Minnesota, but in Chicago, Tibbs managed to overachieve with almost always a shorthanded group. Dealing with injuries to Rose or other key players, the scrappy Bulls who would win a few playoff games and win more regular season games than people expected were, you know, Tibbs squeezed as much as possible out of an undermanned group, whereas I feel like Fred Hoiberg did the opposite. He fell short with a group that was subpar. So to me, that's the difference, and I don't know. To me, that is what I think about when thinking, can Fred do more and get more out of what Tibbs was getting out of those guys in Minnesota? I have my doubts.
It's funny, our friend Nick Friedel had tweeted out, it's like, said, you know, it would be fun to see a pairing of Tom Thibodeau and Fred Hoiberg on the same coaching staff, because they kind of yin and yang. And I was like, well, you kind of saw a quasi version of that here in Chicago when Boylan was here with Hoiberg, right? Like, if
right, Boylan is Tibbs,
yeah,
light.
Like, Boylan is RC Cola
or Tibbs heavy, depending on some of his recent quotes and what's going on. But yeah,
if he's RC Cola and of Tom Thibodeau, we kind of saw that already, how that would play out. Obviously, Tom is probably better coach than Jim Boylan, no doubt, but still, interesting to think about. But yeah, that'll be something that we have to keep our eyes on. The last two things real quick. One, let's have a good laugh for the Cleveland Cavaliers, who have leaned all the way into the tank by signing Cameron Payne to a 10-day contract. So I had a good laugh after...
Dude.
After
Tank Commander found himself a new tank.
I had a damn good laugh after I saw that. I can't even believe that they spent a 10-day contract on him. But good luck to campaign. And then the final thing I have for you, Matt, is Jimmy Butler. Like, this was a news story this weekend. Butler kind of butting heads with Coach Brown and the 76ers. Like, is any of us surprised at this point? Like, is anybody surprised at all? And I think it was kind of blown out of proportion. It sounded like the coach said it wasn't that big of a deal, and then we all kind of made it a big deal in the media and on NBA Twitter. But to say I'm surprised would be saying I'm dumb. And
yeah, of course NBA Twitter made it a big deal, because we got a report from one of the most reliable sources for NBA news saying there's an issue going on in Philadelphia and there was an unpleasant confrontation between Jimmy Butler and his new head coach, Brett Brown. And we all said, shocking. Can't believe that happened. And away we go with all of our various Jimmy Butler takes. And this guy is a diva and a problem everywhere he goes. And he's going to get another coach fired, or, you know, he's going to make enemies instead of friends with another group of players. And will he re-sign with Philly once his season comes to an end? And all, like, not at all surprising. Hilarious. Jimmy has his issues with what he thinks that the Sixers offense should be, and clearly thinks that he should be a bigger part of it, because, you know, it's like the three alphas picture from back in the day with Jimmy and D Wade and Rondo, and it's Jimmy saying, all right, so I'm gonna bring the ball up, and Rondo being like, but I'm the point guard. Jimmy being like, all right, so I'm gonna bring the ball up. That's clearly what's going on here in Philly. Even though, I'm sorry, Jimmy, you are not as dominant of a player as Joel Embiid. Joel Embiid is, like, honest to God, MVP caliber kind of player in the NBA right now. Jimmy is not. Jimmy is a Robin. He is not a Batman. And he has time and again failed to let that sink in to his overly, enormously growing ego. So these problems will continue to crop up, and none of us should be surprised by it. Bulls fans could be entertained by it because it's not our problem anymore. Thank God.
It's pretty funny. And, like, the 76ers are going to have to figure this out, and figure it out quickly, too, because they've got a huge decision this summer to whether or not he's going to be a part of that team going forward, and we'll find out. Yes.
Jordan, before we get out of here, woes just came across my alerts. This is 9:50 a.m. Monday morning. Adrian Wojnarowski. Houston has traded guard Michael Carter Williams and cash to Chicago, league sources tell ESPN.
Oh, you are you serious?
I am dead serious.
You gotta be.
Michael Carter Williams.
You gotta be fucking.
Is a Chicago Bull.
Are you serious?
I am dead serious, man. I'm staring at a Woj tweet right now from 9:49 a.m., 7 January 2019. Blue check mark Woj. Houston has traded Michael Carter Williams and cash to Chicago.
What is the point of this? There's got to be a move here, right?
There's got to be some other move here. This might be a move for another move that the Bulls are working on.
He better not play a single game in a Bulls uniform.
There's got to be another shoe here that we need to wait to drop. But hey, right at the tail at the end of our episode, we caught this one. We always do. Okay, Chicago, here's another update. Chicago will send a future conditional second round pick to complete the deal. Salary cap move for the Rockets, who would have had to guarantee Carter Williams a deal for the season by 5 p.m. today. So we just sent the Rockets.
Why are we trading second-round picks?
We just sent a second-round pick to the Rockets to take Carter Williams from them.
For Michael Carter Williams?
I'm baffled, man. I'm honestly baffled by what's going on.
What are we doing?
Well, hey, it's good thing we got two second-rounders for Justin Holiday, right?
Are you kidding me? You take two steps forward on Friday and take three steps back today? Like, what is the point of that? If he plays a single game, I swear, man. What a joke.
I don't know what's going on. I really don't know what's going on.
There better be another move. There better be another move, and it better be fast. He better not be joining the team like Marshawn Brooks didn't join the team. Find another place for him. We saw what he did. He was an embarrassment. He was probably a bigger embarrassment than Cameron Payne was here with the Bulls. If he plays a single game with this team, I'm going to be so pissed off. That is a joke. You acquire two second-round picks on Friday.
And then
you're going to trade one to the Rockets? What are we doing?
You know what, Jordan? This is what I needed to lift my spirits. I've just been so depressed for the last 24 hours after the conclusion of that Bears game, and this the hilarity of this being a real thing I am no longer sad about the Bears. It puts everything in perspective.
What a joke. If there's not another move, if there's not another move in the next 7 days where that and that guy joins the team, that is a joke.
This is hilarious.
How do you watch the highlights from him as a Bulls player not even 2 years ago and think that he was good? You're telling me that we cut Spencer Dinwiddie, we traded Tony Snell, and now we traded a second round pick to get this guy back again? Are you kidding
me?
Dude,
I got nothing. This is ridiculous.
Oh my God.
I am just going to laugh my ass off until maybe we figure out what the other shoe is that's yet to drop. But oh my God, this is hilarious. So we've already got texters texting into our text and voicemail line. What the hell is this move? give us your thoughts. Hold on. Nobody panic. Woj tweet. Chicago will waive Michael Carter-Williams, league sources tell ESPN. His contract would become guaranteed for season at 5 p.m. today. So they're waiving Michael Carter-Williams, but they just sent a second-round pick to Houston for what purpose?
Yeah, what was that? Like, okay, he's getting waived, but what was the point of freeing up the cap space? Like, what am I missing here?
We're missing something.
There's got to be another move made here, because you don't just trade a second-round pick to waive Carter Williams.
No, that doesn't make it. Like, it makes no sense to send a pick away to get a player to then waive immediately. Like, there's zero. I know we give the Bulls front office a lot of grief when they deserve it, but this makes complete zero logic if there isn't another move attached to it to just give away a draft pick. Literally just give one away for a player that you immediately waive. There's got to be something else here.
Maybe a Rolo or Jabari deal on the horizon. Maybe, like, does this free, like, we'd have to dive more into it, and we can look into it and talk about it tomorrow, but there's got to be a reason why they did this. Free up money, free up something, because you don't just give away second round picks after you acquired two not even 72 hours ago.
Oh my gosh. Oh
wow, that was a roller coaster of emotions.
Bulls Twitter. Bulls Twitter is going to be so fun for the next few hours.
All I can say is thank God that dude's not going to play in a Bulls uniform.
Oh no, okay. There's no way. There's no way. I mean, people would riot outside the United Center.
All right, well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. You can follow us on social media at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Remember, stay up to date with us at Locked On Bulls. We'll have more of this Michael Carter-Williams weirdness going on right now. Maybe there's another move in place that we don't know about. Otherwise, we will be back tomorrow to kind of fill you guys in on all the details. Drop us your thoughts, though, at 331-979-1369. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow on a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.